Good morning, everyone. We're going ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. Today we have one bill set for public hearing and work session, and that's House Bill 4055A. And we have a limited number of individuals that have signed up, but before we take testimony, Whitney, why don't you give us an overview, please?
Yes, thank you, Chair Prezanski, members of the committee. This is House Bill 4055A and was brought to you by Representative Olson. 4055A modifies the duties a driver must perform when the driver is aware or should reasonably be aware of the probability that the driver was involved in a collision involving property damage, injury or death to another person, or injury or death to a domestic animal. It also adds a requirement that the driver who discovers after leaving the scene of an accident that the driver may have been involved in a collision to comply as nearly as possible with these duties and to contact 911 if the collision involved injury or death to another person. There's a dash A4 amendment for your consideration. The dash A4 modifies the applicable mental state to have or have reason to believe that the driver was in a collision and defines reason to believe. It also specifies the information a driver must provide to 911 when the driver has learned of an accident involving injury or death to another person after leaving the scene of the accident. House Bill 4055A with the A4 amendment has no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
All right, thank you. The first panel will include Representative Olson, Bracken McKay, and Susan Robinson. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Andy Olson. I'm state representative out of the Albany area. And just quickly give you a brief of what House Bill 4055 is all about. It's actually somewhat of a fix to the hit and run statutes that we have right now here in the state. If some of you may recall an incident that occurred back in October 2013, two little girls were killed, run over. Eventually, long story short of that, that case moved forward to the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals felt that there was an issue that needed to be addressed by us in the legislature that created a gap from that incident. That's why I have with me today Deputy District Attorney from Washington County, Bracken McKay. He's going to kind of give you a little bit of a PowerPoint, walk through the law a little bit with you as well. Also have with Susan Robinson, the mom of the two little girls, with us, and she's going to share her story a little bit of that whole issue. But this is a tough one. I just flat tell you, I really appreciate this opportunity, Chair Prezanski. You have been deeply involved as we have brought this bill over from the House to your committee here. I feel very, very good about what you've done for the work and those who have been involved with the dash 4 amendments. So we'll give you that opportunity then to hear and flesh this whole thing out. Thank you.
Great. Bracken, you starting?
Thank you, Chairman Prezanski and Vice Chair Thatcher, for this opportunity. And you know, it's been a real honor for me.
And Bracken, I need you to put your name on the record, please.
And my name is Bracken McKay. I'm a senior deputy district attorney with the Washington County DA's office in Hillsboro, Oregon. It's been an honor for me to get to know Tom and Susan Robinson beginning in October of 2013. And what I've really learned is sometimes even in the darkest of times, you really see the good in people, and no more so than in Tom and Susan. So in October of 2013, a driver went through a leaf pile and ran over two little girls, causing their death. The driver was less than a block away, and moments later in time, when the driver realized that she had seriously injured or maybe killed the two little girls, she took steps to take her car from the scene, hide it at her boyfriend's house. They went out for ice cream that night and took it through a car wash the next morning. A neighbor had seen a conversation and saw them examining the car and knew about the case because it was on every news channel in the Portland area. And at that point, called in to 911, and the police were able to put the case together. A grand jury indicted the defendant, and she was found guilty at trial of failure to perform the duties of a driver involving injury or death. It's important to note that the actual collision itself was an accident, and had she stopped at the time, there would have been no criminal charges. But what did happen as a result of this was a major crime team investigation, because we didn't know exactly what had happened or how it had happened. We didn't know if this was something different than it was. It impacted the information that the parents received and what they were able to do, and Susan is going to talk a little bit about that. So the case went to trial. The defendant was found guilty, like I said, and the Court of Appeals then, in Save versus Garcia Cisneros, reversed the case, and they identified a hole in the current hit-and-run statute. And here's what they wrote. They said, the state may be right in identifying a statutory gap, but it is not our role to fill that gap for the legislature. And so essentially at that point, they invited you to take a look at the hit and run law and fill that gap. And that's what we're here asking you to do today. Let me tell you what the law does, and I also want to talk about what the law doesn't do. So first, if a driver is involved in a collision, they have to stop and investigate what they hit. Second, drivers need to comply with the current hit and run law, even if they've left the scene before they learn that they were involved in a crash. I want to talk about what the law doesn't do. The law doesn't change the information that needs to be provided. The law simply changes the timing of when that information has to be provided if one learns later that they were involved in a crash. And, you know, this last Thursday, we had a chance to have a work group that was led by Chair Przanski, and there was input from Department of Justice, from the OCDLA, and from the ACLU, and actually the ACLU had a couple of really good suggestions that we incorporated into this to reference directly the information that needs to be provided as being the same information that is already required under the present hit and run law. I do want to mention, there have been some mention or some concern that perhaps there's a Fifth Amendment self-incrimination problem with this statute, and I want to assure the committee that as it is currently written with the -4 amendments, there is no self-incrimination issue. Because like I said, it doesn't change what information needs to be provided or who that information needs to be provided to. It only expands the timing of providing that information to include drivers that become aware of a collision after leaving the scene. So the current law already requires that a driver has to remain at the scene until a police officer has arrived and received the information required if the people that you would normally exchange information with are either unconscious or deceased. This hit and run law has been in place since 1983, and since 1983 there's been one case and one case only that has addressed the whether or not there's a self-incrimination problem with the hit and run law, and that was in Save versus Monroe in the early 1990s. And what that case said was that Oregon's hit and run law does not violate a defendant's right against self-incrimination. There are other statutes that we've taken bits and pieces of from Utah, from Minnesota, from the District of Columbia. So we're not breaking new ground here. Other states have dealt with the same issues that we're talking about. This is a picture of Anna and Abigail that was taken moments before their death. And, you know, it's important that when we talk about your good work, that it involves real people and it impacts the lives of real people. And when you think about it, this law, here's what it does. it's really hard for a driver who's involved in a collision with another car to claim they didn't know that they were involved in that collision. What this really does is protect the most vulnerable of Oregonians. It protects the bicyclist, the jogger, the young child who's chasing a ball, or maybe the next little girl in a leaf pile. Think about the current law as the Court of Appeals has now defined it, the current hit and run law. You can be less than a block away, and moments later in time when you learn that you've hurt or seriously injured another person, and you have zero responsibility to help them. No responsibility to call 911, no responsibility to take steps that might save a child's life, or at the very least, lessen the emotional burden on a grieving family. There will be times when returning to the scene or picking up the phone to call 911 is literally going to mean the difference between life and death. The current law, as defined by the Court of Appeals, allows for or even encourages plausible deniability, and that's bad public policy. We can do better. This is a law that protects the most vulnerable in our communities, and Oregonians are stronger when we look out for each other, when we do the right thing. And today I'm asking you to do the right thing and pass Anna and Abigail's law. I want to just say one last thing, and that is Susan is going to talk a little bit about Anna and Abigail's legacy and who they were and what they have contributed even after their death, with an entire movement called Love Rocks, with a park in their honor. With organ donation. And I think this is yet another thing that they want to give to our state, to save the next family from having to go through what the Robinsons had to go through. So thank you very much. It was wonderful to see the support this had on the House side, with a 59-0 passage. To know that this is a truly bipartisan effort with Representative Barker and Representative Olson and the assistance of Chair Przanski. So thank you all very much. And I'd like to turn it over to Susan Robinson at this time.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Chair, for allowing me to speak, committee.
You want me to hold it?
You can hold it up.
Sure.
This is Anna. When this photo was taken, she was 6 years old and had just entered the first grade at a new school. She was very shy around those that she didn't know, often telling me that she needed to warm up first before she'd go play. But energetic and a risk taker around those she did. We called her our monkey at home. She'd go from the top to our house, to the bottom of the house, to the top to our house. We lived in three stories, so up and down all the time. She was nurtured to the core. She's strong, kind, courageous, and extremely fast, often beating most of the boys in our neighborhood in foot races. She rode horses, she climbed trees, and she loved with her entire heart. She gave the best hugs, wrapping her arms around me, her mama, and squeezing with all her might every chance she got. She is my girl. This is Abigail, my stepdaughter, although in our family we never use the word step. When this photo was taken, Abigail was 11, a preteen, and she had just started the sixth grade. Abigail was a dreamer, always trying to figure out what the next phase of her life was going to be like. She was already saving for college. She protected those that couldn't protect themselves. She stood up when no one else would, and she held tight to what she knew was right. She was a theater kid to the core and loved being on stage. She was my bright star. On October 20th of 2013, not even a month after these photos were taken, my girls were involved in an accident in front of my house. Anna and Abigail, doing what many kids did that day due to the odd dry weather we were having, were playing and hiding in a giant pile of leaves. At the same time, A 19-year-old girl driving south on our street drove through the pile of leaves after being prompted by her boyfriend and her brother. She did not see my girls in the leaves prior to driving through them, but did not stop after she knew she hit something. What happened in front of my house that day was a perfect storm that changed our lives and our hearts forever. Anna, being little, went to heaven instantly. And although that breaks my heart every second of every single day, I am grateful that she had no pain that day. She was playing, and then she was in heaven. Abigail, being a little bigger and having one last job to do before she joined her sister, was life-flighted to Randall Children's Hospital, where a team of doctors and nurses found the perfect matches to her organs and tissue. She gave life to four people and sight to one with her organ donation. I remember standing on the side of the road waiting to hold my Anna one last time. I was told initially that it was a possibility once they, the 30-plus officers and firefighters, figured out what had happened. When the coroner arrived, I remember having a conversation with her and one of the detectives. Because they didn't know what happened, there wasn't a car or driver that had stopped. It was now a crime scene, and that needed to be solved. With that said, they informed me that Anna was evidence, and I couldn't hold her one last time. I remember telling them I wasn't going to press charges, and because I knew in my heart that it was an accident and that the person that caused it was going to feel really bad when they watched the news that night. I remember my heart feeling broken and very bad for them. A few days later, we found out that that wasn't the case. Approximately 5 minutes after my girls were hit, one of the passengers in the car rode his bike to the scene where he engaged with my husband, who was frantic in the process of calling 911. He then rode his bike back home, not even a half a block from my house, the scene, and told the driver and the other passenger what had happened. They had two small children. At that point, they made a decision that impacted our family in a way that is immeasurable. They got in their car and left, went to Walmart, went and had ice cream, came back to their house, passing the scene once again, and went to bed. The next day, they washed their car, attempting to get rid of any evidence that may have still been there. With a tip from a neighbor, the driver and the passenger were questioned by police a couple days later, and the truth came out. I remember thinking that I was grateful that we knew what had happened. I was devastated by the news, but at least now we knew. There was no unanswered questions. The driver pled not guilty to the charge of hit and run for failing to identify herself as a driver in a deadly crash. There was to be a trial where, over the course of many days, we had to relive our worst nightmare again and again, in excruciating stark detail, and in public. On January 31st of 2014, the public, in the form of a jury, found her guilty with little deliberation of two counts of a felony hit and run for failure to identify herself as a driver in a deadly crash. The driver made a horrible decision on October 20th, and the consequences to that behavior was being found guilty by the jury on that day. At the sentencing, I forgave her and asked the judge for her to receive no jail time. She was young, and I knew that if I didn't forgive her, I would be held hostage for the rest of my days by anger and bitterness. She said she was sorry and that she wished she would have done something different. I believed her, and I wanted to believe that she would do good in this world in honor of my girls, and she would remember them every moment of her life. She was sentenced to 3 years of formal probation and 250 hours of community service. Months later, there was an appeal brought forth. I remember distinctly the sick feeling in my gut when Washington County Prosecutor Bracken McKee called to let us know. We were once again heartbroken and couldn't understand how it was possible that anyone would feel justice wasn't served that day in the courtroom. She knew she caused injury to somebody minutes after the accident and made a conscious decision not to return. Bracken explained the loophole in the law, that because my girls weren't asking for help, she had no obligation to return. That made no sense to me because they weren't able to ask for help. Anna was already in heaven, She was no longer there, and Abigail was unconscious and never regained consciousness. He went on to talk about the letter of the law versus the nature of the law, and I remember feeling so sad that the two didn't match up. It made absolutely no sense to me. We were in limbo for years, wondering what was going to happen next. On May 3rd of last year, I once again received a call from Bracken letting us know that the conviction was overturned and the appeal won by the Oregon, because Oregon law does not require a defendant to return to the scene of the accident after he or she has left the scene later and learns that he or she was involved in an accident that injured and killed another person. This was the letter of the law, and that was it. I have no doubt that if that driver came back to the scene that day, I would have hugged her and we would have moved forward together. If she would have come back, I would have held Anna one last time. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case, and the way the current law stands, she has no obligation to identify herself as a person who was involved in an accident. This has caused our family a tremendous amount of added grief in a situation where our grief is already immeasurable. My ask for all of you today is to consider what the right thing to do is after finding out where you weren't involved in an accident, and in that, consider closing the loophole in the current law. In making this change, someone in the future, already trying to survive a perfect storm, will not be faced with what we have gone through for the last 4 years. Years of reliving a tragedy. If the law changes, our girls will have had a small piece of making that happen, and that makes us very proud. I can't go watch Abigail on stage anymore. I can't watch Anna ride her big horse Tiva anymore. But what I could say is that my girls helped change the law that was broken. 6 months after the girls went to heaven, my husband and I had decided that we didn't want my daughter's lives to be focused on that tragedy. So we started a movement called Love Rocks, which are little rocks with fabric hearts on them, like being left all over the world now, just a token of love and joy. What we wanted was people to say their names and not grimace at what would happen to them, but smile because of who they were. We now live in a life where our baseline emotion is sadness. Our hearts hurt every second of every day. Through making a choice to focus on our girls' love and joy, we have been able to see the light their legacy has brought to so many. We are so grateful for this light because it, along with our faith and trust in God, has helped us to survive through our grief. A perfect fall day for me now is to go to our farmer's market and hear a young child scream, "Look, it's Anna and Abigail's mom." I smile because, yes, I am their mother. This past fall, Anna would have turned 11, a preteen. It was the first year that I wasn't really quite sure what she would want. So we got a bunch of love rocks and we went showed her little sister, Alice, all of her favorite places, the zoo and her favorite restaurants, and we left love rocks everywhere and drank milkshakes. On December 27th, Abigail would have been 16. This is a very big birthday in that she couldn't wait to drive. That morning, we went to the DMV and we spoke to their workers and shared her organ donation story and left them a big basket of love rocks in which they passed out all day long to all those people going to get their driver's license. I know, and I have no doubt, that Abigail would have gotten her license that day, and that's exactly where I needed to be. I also have no doubt that she would have been a very responsible driver. Thank you so much for allowing us to share our story. No matter what happens after today, we will always continue to live a life that honors our girls. And by sharing their love and joy, they have taught us, along with many others, what it truly means to live a life love-drenched. We are and will forever be blessed to be their parents. Thank you very much.
Susan, thank you very, very much for coming forward and telling this difficult story.
and your strength and your husband's strength to move forward.
Thank you.
Questions for the panel? Bracken, I do have one question. I just want to set this on the record. It's my understanding the way the court ruled on this based on the evidence that was presented and the position that the defendant took, that they came to the conclusion that we were not, as a state, being able to prove that she knew at the time of the contact of the accident that she was aware that she had hit something or someone.
That's correct.
Right. And so, colleagues, what we're looking at is if someone becomes aware of that situation after the fact, this is what the void will fill, that they would then have that obligation to, if it's permissible, to return back to the location, if not, to make contact with authorities so we can have, in this particular case, understand we had somewhat of a immediate response from the neighbors and the family. But if it was somewhere else that that there weren't other people around, you would actually have the ability to get first responders to that location and hopefully be able to assist those individuals. Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So under the new law, a person is engaged in an incident, they discover it later, they immediately go back and report that. At that point, under the law, would the case move forward in the same way it would have had they known at the moment and stayed at the scene? Or will it create additional liability for having left? And I guess at that point, is it considered a hit and run? Or because the person, upon becoming aware, if they comply with the law and immediately contact authorities and offer assistance, will that be considered as if they had never left?
Depending on what the other evidence would show, if they raise that as that I did not know at the time of impact that I hit someone or hit something, and then they reported it afterwards, they would be more than likely not charged with the crime of failure to be at the scene based on getting that knowledge. But you could also see under specific facts they could state that, but you could demonstrate that they actually did know prior to that and they had left the scene, then they could still be charged.
Thank you. Thank you for anticipating my next question. Yeah. I appreciate that.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Again, Susan, thank you very much for being strong, and you and your husband for leading a way of restorative justice as to how to move forward and be able to be positive in your life.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Our next panel will include Aaron Knott and Jennifer Lloyd. While they're coming up, is there anyone else who did not sign up who wants to give testimony on House Bill 4055A? Not seeing anyone raising their hand, these will be our last two witnesses. Aaron?
Thank you, Chair Prasansky, members of the committee. For the record, my name's Aaron Knott. I'm the legislative director for the Attorney General in the Oregon Department of Justice here in support of the A4 amendments to 4055. This particular tragedy also ran through our office. We received this case on appeal, and in fact, sitting to my right is Jennifer Lloyd. She's the attorney in charge of our criminal appeals section. She argued this case, and we lost, which is how we became aware of this issue with the law. We didn't take a position on this bill in the first chamber. We changed to supportive for two reasons. The first is the testimony you just heard. The Attorney General shares in the desire to offer every condolence to the family. Second, however, is in between, really in the process of this bill going through the first chamber and then over the course of the last week, counsel and Chair Prasansky provided us with an opportunity to really dig into some of the legal questions on this issue. And given the gravity of what can go wrong on appeal, we were very grateful for the opportunity to tighten this up as much as possible. We're mostly here to answer technical questions about any of the applicable laws, if there are any, but we think we are much better situated if anything like this should ever happen again. One point I did want to make, though, echoing what Senator Gelser raised a moment ago, you know, many accidents, even tragic accidents, are not crimes, and they never will be. You know, really bad things can happen when you drive a car, even using a conventional standard of care. I mean, we all know it. And that's not inherently criminal, and it won't be made criminal here. What this does is really clarify that if you become aware that you've hurt someone, you have obligations, and letting you know what the procedure is under the law to follow those obligations. But, you know, if you return to the scene and you didn't know you were in a collision, no, it's absent other circumstances suggesting criminality, that is not a hit and run. So other than that, we're here for technical questions.
All right. Any questions?
Well,
Senator Thatcher.
Maybe just a comment. It just seems like some of the things that I've read, anyway, seem like what a normal response would be. You're like, oh my goodness, you go back and you make sure that everything's okay, and you would want to contact authorities. So I doubt somebody's going to go, okay, so where's that statute? Okay, follow procedure here. Do they just seem like normal sort of reaction that a person would have upon learning that they might have hurt somebody?
Chair Przanski, Senator Thatcher, I very much hope that's true.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair. Senator
Gilcher. I think to that point, it also goes to young drivers and driver education, and having unfortunately spent a lot of time in driver education over the last few years with my children, I imagine as they go through the duties of the driver, talking about this piece is important. I know in our house after this happened and we had kids becoming drivers, we talked extensively about that's very scary, but you must always go back no matter what the fear is. We'll love you, we'll support you. It's really important to go back. And I think for especially young drivers who have a lot of fear, having this conversation with them in driver's ed and prompting those conversations, I think is incredibly important.
Any other comments or questions? Thank you all for coming forward. As I'll ask once again, is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 4055A? Not seeing, we're closing the public hearing. I believe we have all our paperwork, so I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 4055A. Senator Thatcher.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -A4 amendments dated February 20th, 2018.
Senator Thatcher moves for the adoption of the A4 amendments into Senate Bill 4055A. Dated February 20th, 2018. Discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move the House Bill 4055A as amended with the -A4 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Thatcher now moves House Bill 4055A as amended by the -4 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Again, any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Chair will carry 4055A to the floor. And with this, I do want to say once again, Susan, please tell your husband that we appreciate both of your strengths to come forward and be willing to share. These are experiences that for us, we can't live. We can only get from individuals such as yourselves. The need for these type of discussions can only be very hard on you to have to relive and go through that. But it's very important, very meaningful for us to be able to have that context so we can, in fact, do what's right for Oregonians. Thank you very much. With that, we're adjourned. And tomorrow, we're here at 8:15?
8.
All right. What do we have on? Oh, that's right. We have three bills that have been scheduled, I think, for tomorrow, or is it just two?
House Bill 4008.
All right. So we are going to start at 8, and here's the situation. We're now within 1 hour notice. There are a number of bills that are supposed to be loading into the system coming from the House to the Senate. We're expecting close to half a dozen additional bills that could be assigned to the committee. So be aware that we may be adding more bills to tomorrow's hearings. With that, we're adjourned until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.